Hey, everybody. Welcome to Melrose Sheltering in Place. I'm Nan.
And I'm Christopher, and I have some exciting news for us.
What?
My good friend Christina has reached her sheltering in place level where she decided to watch Melrose Place. So now she gets to listen to the podcast.
Yay!
So, of course, you know, when you do an announcement like this, we're like 20 episodes in, so she's not going to hear this, but we can still be excited about it. Like, you know, it'll be a treat for her when she gets to this episode.
It'll be a nice little surprise.
Yeah. Hi, Christina. So,
welcome. Welcome to the show, Christina. Welcome to Melrose Place. It's a wonderful place to be. Oh, my God. Maybe that's our new tagline.
It's a wonderful place to be. Yeah. Jort's Corner.
Sheltering in place with a couple of wackos who are watching a show that's like 30 years old.
Yeah.
And full of completely insane, obnoxious people.
Mm-hmm. And the episode title for this first one we're going into is hilarious. I just noticed it's called Duet for One, and that doesn't make any sense.
No, it does not make any sense. But that is very Melrose Place.
Yeah, I mean, maybe as we talk about the plot, it'll make sense. But you know what? I doubt it.
Before I forget, I'm kind of cutting the chit chat a little bit, but we can continue with that in a second. But I was just looking at the spreadsheet. For those playing along at home, Christopher makes us a spreadsheet with the information about the episodes. And I was just thinking about that opening scene in the first episode for this week, Duet for One, where Allison is going towards the apartment door. You know, she's coming home from her business trip. She's going towards the apartment door. And it's all shot like it's being shot on a handheld camcorder. Like it's like at weird angles and kind of moving oddly. So they're trying to be kind of edgy with the production, I think.
Well, you know, I was thinking about stuff like that because I unfortunately mentioned to somebody that it's a shame that the real world isn't streaming anywhere. And then, of course, he had to go and point out that CBS All Access has a lot of seasons, not necessarily the ones that you really want to watch, like London and Seattle and Miami, but a lot of them. So I watched the first episode of Philadelphia the other day, and I was like, wow, I forgot what the real world is like with its super-duper handheld crap and the handwritten titles and the bad fonts. Like, we've come a long way since then, for sure.
Yeah, the only seasons... I never saw Philly. I think Miami was probably the last... And if they've been to Miami more than once, then it was Miami the first time around. It might have been the last season that I really, really watched.
Well, that's a legendary season with Dan and et cetera.
Like. Yeah. Oh, God. And they had, I don't know if they still do, but they had season one on Hulu for a while. And I rewatched it. And I mean, talk about, oh, my gosh. Like, that was the pioneer, right? So it's like funny to watch it's funny to go back and watch that and think about the ways that reality TV storylines have developed since then. Cause you can tell they didn't really have, like they kind of had storylines each character had a thing they were doing. Right. Mm-hmm. But like you could definitely tell that things have become more controlled since then.
Yeah.
And oh my God, you know what I would really love to watch though is LA and San Fran. Like,
I think those two are on there. I think those two might be on there.
Oh my God, Christopher, don't tell me that. Oh my God.
Well,
true story.
Yeah. Yeah, those are. It's funny because 2 and 3 were like huge hits, and then 4 in London was like good, but super boring. Like, everybody kind of got along on that season, and so they didn't get what they needed out of it. And so when season 5 came along, the producers were like starting to add twists. And they didn't do a good job with the twist in season 5 because they were like, you guys need to draw up a business plan. And if we like your business plan, you get some seed money.
That was Boston, right?
No, that was Miami.
Okay, well, in Boston, maybe Boston was...
They made them work at a kindergarten or a daycare in Boston.
I do remember watching Boston. So maybe, was that season six? I don't know. I definitely dropped off the Real World train somewhere kind of early, because, like, the more and more that it became about just really super beautiful people. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that that's the funny thing is, like, not that the people that were on it all the time were not, you know, pretty people, but you know how it kind of turned into, like, hyper Instagram influencer type, you know,
that would be the Las Vegas people. Season for sure.
Yes, Las Vegas season is, like, definitely where I just was like, nope.
Yep.
Turning that off.
And
oh wait, but I also remember Seattle. That was the one with, like, Irene mm-hmm. and the slap and everything. Yeah.
And you know, speaking of Irene, shout out to her. She was kind of an early pioneer in podcasting. She has had a really good podcast called No One's Listening, which was about media literacy, and it was really good. I listened for a long time and I really enjoyed it.
I'm just laughing because I'm like, oh, is that about how nobody's listening to anybody's podcasts and we're all just out here podcasting and nobody's listening?
No, back then there were like 5 podcasts, so so she probably enjoyed quite a bit of fame based on availability alone.
Oh my gosh, now everybody's got a podcast, including us.
Yeah.
Hi everybody, welcome to our podcast.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to you about the TV show Melrose Place. Just a quick thing, disclaimer, I don't know, explanation of what this thing is. We are currently sheltering in place thanks to coronavirus. They are rolling out the vaccine, but Christopher and I are probably, like, way down on the list of people who are going to get it, so we're probably going to be trapped in our houses forever. And neither of us had ever watched Melrose Place, even though we were both alive in the early 90s. I know it's hard to imagine that there were people back then, but we were there. But we didn't watch Melrose Place, so we saw it was on Hulu, and we decided to start watching it and to make a podcast about it from our respective homes in Dallas, Texas. And do you live in Everett, or do you live in a...
In Everett.
Okay, in Everett, Washington. And so there you go. Yeah. That's basically what we're doing here.
Everett, Washington, where the U.S.'s first confirmed case of the coronavirus was. Yeah.
What?
Yep. We are a pioneer in Everett. I mean, I'm sure tons of people had it all over the place, but we were the first place where there was a diagnosis, so...
I mean, they're saying now that they think it was here as early as, like, October of 2019. Mm. So it's just that people were getting really sick and they didn't know what they had.
Did you hear about that choir that, like, they were like, maybe we should cancel our rehearsal? This is months and months ago when it was first, you know.
Yes, it was, like, early on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that.
That was, like, 2 towns over from us as well.
well... You should definitely go beat those people up.
Well, I think the virus did that for me.
God, oops. okay, awkward.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So, yeah, let's. You want to jump into it?
Sure. So, episode 13 of season 2 is called Duet for One, which is a weird title that kind of makes no sense. So we'll start off with some coverage about Allison. This is when she gets back home from her successful business trip to San Francisco, which you may remember also ended up with her and Steve getting drunk and eating Thanksgiving dinner in her room. And Billy called just in time to hear the champagne pop. And so she gets back home and all of his stuff is cleared out of the apartment. It's a lot like episode 1 when Natalie was gone when she woke up.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. She checks the, as she would call it, phone machine. And there's a message from Jake for Billy about Billy moving in. So she goes next door to talk to him about it, and she has a good luck pen to give him as a gift, but it turns out that his boss Nancy at Escapade magazine has killed his assignment. So, you know, it's a day late and a buck short, or whatever. Amanda over at D&D congratulates Allison on her job well done in San Francisco, but as is expected, the conversation devolves quickly, and they start talking about Steve, and Allison accuses Amanda of engineering that breakup with Billy. Another day, Allison's heading out to work, and Billy shows up to pick up more of his stuff, and he spots Steve's state-of-the-art computer on the table. It's like a very large laptop.
It's really funny because, like, I mean, obviously for the time it probably was super fancy, but like in today's, it was basically like the laptop equivalent of like that brick cellular phone.
Totally. And you could probably hook up that cell phone to it to get onto like CompuServe. Allison stops him, and she says, if you move any more of your stuff out, it's really over, and I'm going to date Steve. And he gets all mad, and he throws the computer like an abusive shit stain, and it smashes a hole in the wall.
Yeah, I was like, that is abuse. Like, Billy, that is fucking abuse. And he's being such a child. Like, she had to go on her work trip. What I don't understand is honestly why Allison is still trying with this guy. Like, Billy sucks and like all the blame goes to Billy, but like, Allison, girl, get some self-respect. Stop talking to this dude. He is acting like a fucking child.
Yeah. Here at Melrose Sheltering in Place, we just don't get the appeal with Billy, and we never have.
I mean, when he's not talking, I can see the physical the physical hotness is happening. Like, he's definitely got a bod.
But his face is dumb. Pretty much
his whole personality is awful. Like, he has no redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
And I just don't get it. He's trash.
Yeah.
Throw him away.
No wonder his dad never told him he was proud of him. So speaking of Billy and Jake, over in their apartment, which, I guess we figured out that Billy is probably sleeping on a fold out couch there, but we haven't seen that yet. Because it's long established that, Jake has a one bedroom because that was why he previously moved in with Joe. Billy complains that there's no food in the apartment, and that's weird to me anyway, because it's not like they're dating and that they have shared groceries or anything. Like, don't complain to your roommate that you didn't buy any food. Just, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, bro. Go get in your cab and go, like, buy some McDonald's. Like, what the hell? Jake is under no obligation to have food. Heck, even if Jake had food in the refrigerator, it wouldn't be your food.
Seriously.
Billy. Again, Billy sucks.
Yeah. And Jake realizes this and he tells him, hey, go buy some food, or better yet, just leave. And you know, he kind of apologizes and he says, hey, I'm sorry. I'm just on edge. There's a legal situation with Amanda's dad, Palmer. But I can't go into details. I am trying to distance myself from Amanda because somehow that's going to soften the blow when Palmer's shit hits the fan, which this doesn't make any sense to me. I think that Jake should probably be a better boyfriend to Amanda. And then maybe when she finds out about his betrayal to her dad, the commitment will be there. Anyway.
Right.
Amanda runs into Jake in the courtyard and she says that she misses him and she invites him over for dinner and conversation, and he agrees to come over and says that he misses her too. And when he's over there later, she is wearing like a complete velvet bodysuit, which A+, I like it. And she sits on Jake's lap after they eat some pizza and they bone. Which is not a shock at all. So this is actually really a Sydney episode.
I should get a head-to-toe velvet bodysuit.
I wish you would. For me, I'm thinking more like a romper. Cause,
oh, like it wasn't tight? Like it's not tight?
Well, and that it stops at like shorts level? Because...
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think that that is like my style.
But it's definitely mine.
Shorts are not really my thing. I've got kind of the thick thighs. So you just end up with like bunched up shorts up in your cooter.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, like a full on like 90s, like black velvet.
I'd love to see it.
Bodysuit with like just a blazer over it. That sounds amazing. I would sit in my house and wear that and look super cool and no one would see me because we're in a pandemic.
Well, as for me, a more like a romper makes sense because if you're listening to this and you haven't seen a picture of me, I am what they call a bear. I'm a big fat dude with a big beard. And there's actually a law which states that we have to wear cargo shorts if we leave the house.
So is it a cargo romper? Are there going to be like pockets all in the shorts?
I would insist on it, yeah, because, you know, I need a place for snacks and whatever.
Okay, so somebody out there listening, please God, make Christopher a velvet cargo romper.
We could even give it a cute name like a cromper or something. it would be an interesting thing to see, though, because part of the reason that guys who are shaped like me wear shorts and t-shirts is that it looks weird when we have shirts tucked in and stuff pulled all the way up to our waist because it sticks out really far. So the shorts at hip level allow us to kind of create a definition that would not otherwise be there. And, you know, it's kind of like your two choices to tuck in or not to tuck in. Neither is going to be great, but the not tucking is more comfortable. But anyway, speaking of people who dress in velvet, another velveteen person in the cast is Sydney.
Oh, Lord.
So Amanda knocks on Sydney's door to let her know that rent is due and she better not play any games because she's not exactly popular at Melrose Place. Which is true because, you know.
I think that it's illegal for your landlord to talk to you like that. I don't know.
Is it? It
feels illegal.
Yeah.
It feels illegal. Like, I mean, because, like, you can't just kick somebody out of their apartment. You can't. I mean, I guess you can evict them for not paying their rent. But, like, them being popular or not has no bearing on whether or not they get to stay in the apartment.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
But, you know, Amanda definitely seems like the type who talks a big game and gets away with a lot by doing that, you know, by manipulating people. That's how she got to her big fancy job at D&D in just 5 years of experience, right? Like,
right.
You know, she's full of bravado and whatever else. Is that what piss and vinegar means? I don't know what piss and vinegar means, but
yeah, I think piss and vinegar is a little bit more like blatantly mean. You know, those people who are just like, I don't like anybody and I don't fucking care who knows it.
Like
that, I think, is a little bit more piss and vinegar.
Like the piss and vinegar guy is on his porch with a shotgun and he's defending his property.
Right, or like there's an episode of Golden Girls where they have a neighbor who there's this old lady and she is what is happening? I feel like there's a tree dispute, but I think that's actually a different episode. Anyway, there's like this old lady and the girls are in a legal dispute with her about some neighborly business. And she's just like, I don't care if y'all don't like me. We're going to court or whatever. So anyway,
doesn't she die?
Yes, she does die. And then they go to her funeral and there's no one there. And one lady shows up and starts to give the eulogy and it's all sweet. And they're like, oh my God, she was like that. And they say her name and the lady's like, oh, I thought this was somebody else's funeral, and then like hits the lady's casket because she was such a bitch. That is piss and vinegar. Is like that old lady. I think.
Well,
Welcome to our new podcast where we just speculate on the meaning of different like
idioms,
colloquialisms, and don't actually Google any of it.
Yeah, because everybody really hates it when you stop to Google stuff. They much prefer when you just talk like out of your ass, right?
I mean, isn't that what everybody was doing before Google? I sometimes wonder if like at least 90% of the so-called factoids that we all seem to know is just made up stuff that we all like agreed on making up before Google existed.
Man, if you wanted to be really influential before Google, like you could put factoids on, you know, your products, like little trivia on the back of the cereal box or whatever.
So like a good example, okay, we really should like move on at some point, but otherwise this podcast can be 3 hours long, but there's this factoid that everybody always says where it's like, women, studies show women say 2,000 more words a day than men. And the actual truth is that it's absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true. Hmm. Just not true. So anyway, Everyone says it. And it's like one of those things where people just say it. So then people believe it. So then more people say it. And it's just not true.
I promise I will never say that. It sounds stupid.
Well, first of all, I don't know, but like any time that I've ever been around men, they are talking constantly. They think everybody wants to know everything they think. So I can't imagine that that's true.
No.
But it was like a factoid designed to show that women are just frivolous and we just talk constantly about nothing or just constantly yapping our jaws and all this stuff.
Yeah. And also that you're bad drivers and whatever else. Yeah, you can basically probably ignore any factoid that comes from the Battle of the Sexes era in America. Right. You know, the 70s and 80s, or everybody's full of shit. They're making just shit up.
Everybody's full of shit. Everybody's full of shit. That's also our tagline here at Malheur Sheltering Place. Okay, let's move this forward.
All right.
So Sydney.
So Sydney knows that she's going to need some money to make rent. So she calls Lauren, the ringleader of the prostitution ring, to let her know that she's ready to get to work.
I think we all knew that was going to happen.
Oh, like the for second sure.
That Amanda showed up.
Yeah. So she arrives at a fancy hotel and she meets a client named Ken. And
Ken was hot.
Yeah. And I really like the precedence that we're starting because, you know, Sydney's first encounter with that director was like, you know, the hot producer, director, whatever, like, you know, wow, you could really be doing it with these hot Hollywood dudes. And then her first real client totally is hot. And
yeah, he was hot.
And he even asks if she's okay before they get started. And they like gently bone. It was like a beautiful experience for her, I'm sure. And she got paid.
Yeah. And afterwards, she seemed like, you know, she's sitting there in the robe and he's getting dressed and she seems like happy. She's like, blah, blah, blah. And she's asking him, she's like, why do you even have to pay for sex? Like, you're great or whatever. And then she's like, what do you do? And he's like, let's just say. And he's got that weird tone of voice where it's like nefarious bossy dude. And he's like, let's just say I'm an international man of industry. And then he's like, don't ever ask me again what I do. And then she suddenly gets like really upset. And then she goes and cries in the shower, which as she was turning on the shower, I was like, oh God, we're going to get the crying in the shower scene, which I don't want to sound flippant. Like, again, experience is complicated. It's just a trope. It's just a little bit played out, but, you know, so that was my irritation there more so than that she's having a negative reaction. If she doesn't want to participate in sex work, I hope she'll find a different path for herself. But, I just think that the show is playing this up as it's playing up to like all the negative stereotypes, I think.
Oh, for sure. Right? Yeah. And I do love a good shower cry scene because everybody always sits on the floor of the shower to cry in a movie. And have you ever sat on the floor during the shower? It's kind of annoying. Like
the only times I've ever sat in the floor of a shower is either to masturbate or a few, like last year I went on this like solo trip to Santa Fe, and anybody who knows me knows I love baths. And I like triple quadruple checked on the website that the hotel I booked had bathtubs, and got there. It turns out it didn't. And I just really like to sit in a hot bath. So I literally sat in the floor of this like giant shower and just, I guess, took steam, you know, steam bath essentially.
Were you crying in the shower because it wasn't a bath?
I was not crying. I was just chilling and being slightly irritated that there wasn't a bathtub.
That does suck. So after she cries and cleans up, Sydney arrives at Lauren's and she finds all the girls having pool time, which we love here at Melrose Sheltering pool in Place. Sydney got like a 5-star review from Ken. So they toast to her successful maiden voyage and Lauren gives her a beeper. It's official. So Sydney hands over the wad of cash and Lauren hands back her cut, which is 60%. Which is pretty good. Lauren also gives her credit card so Sydney can go shopping, which is a recipe for disaster. But she arrives back at Melrose Place with a stylish new jacket and two arms full of shopping bags. She hands Amanda 2 months of rent in cash, and she starts basically acting like Amanda. She's like, I need my leaky faucet fixed by tomorrow morning, and also, I'm having 2 new chairs delivered, and somebody needs to be here to accept the delivery in case I can't be here. Which, I don't know what day of the week that's supposed to be, but Amanda has a job, so I don't know. Amanda excuses herself when Jane arrives and starts arguing with Sydney. But Jane tells Sydney that Kimberly died, supposedly, and tells her that just because this happened doesn't mean it's an opportunity for you to be with Michael again. Joe comes down to relax by the pool and she sets up a chair facing away from Sydney. Like, if I didn't want to be around Sydney, I don't think I would just sit right next to her facing away. That's pretty annoying.
Right. It's like it's literally what you would do if you were in a fight with that person and you wanted them to definitely know that you hate their guts.
Yeah.
But it's not a comfortable way to just enjoy your time by the pool. Yeah. Like, it's very silly.
Well, and the courtyard's not that small. She could have set up a little further away.
Right.
But Sydney tries to make small talk and Joe is like, so she wants to know, Sydney, that is, how one becomes an artist. And she explains that she's cut back her hours at work because she's gotten a lot of work modeling. She'll probably quit waiting tables altogether soon. Joe asks about her portfolio, and Sydney says that she doesn't have one or even need one. She's getting work via word of mouth, just like Joe is. Joe is already suspicious, but she says, if you ever need help with photos, I can take some of you. Later on, Joe comes to Sydney's because she is suspicious and worried about her. And it looks like Sydney is about to maybe admit what's going on or maybe make up a story, but she's saved by the bell when her beeper goes off, which is another red flag. Sydney shows Joe out, but on her way out, Joe reiterates that she's on her side. Sydney's next client, Roger, is a little different than the previous ones. She's used to very handsome men, and he is not. And then he opens a briefcase, and he pulls out shackles and a whip. And she says, you know, Lauren didn't mention anything about these toys, and the guy said, Lauren doesn't say much about anything, and that's what makes her so popular, and I suggest you follow her lead.
The thing that's not clicking all the way over for me in the writing of this plot line is that Lauren definitely seems like manipulative in a way, like, to keep Sydney on the hook, you know, like she's doing like the pimp thing where she's like, here, take my credit card, go shopping, like, isn't this so great, blah blah blah, like, you know, that's a manipulation tactic, right? Mm. to get Sydney hooked on this, and like keeps offering her drugs. But at the same time, like, Lauren doesn't strike me as somebody who would be so malicious as to not be like First of all, like, wouldn't you want the person to show up ready to do what this man wants?
Yeah.
Like, I
think the client would expect that.
It doesn't click over for me that she would just like willy-nilly send somebody over and not tell them, okay, this is what he's into.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's just, it feels like it's there to make it more dramatic, but it also just feels like sloppy writing.
Yeah, for sure. Which, you know, from the Melrose Place writers, no way.
What? No. What? Yeah. No.
So Sydney says that she doesn't like his toys and she leaves. And Roger said, Lauren's not going to like this. And Sydney throws a quarter at him and tells him to call her and tell her all about it. Which, that's one thing that we are missing in our society today, is being able to refer to payphones and...
Here's a quarter, call someone who cares.
Yeah, that's one little bit of humor we've lost in the age of cell phones.
There's a whole Travis Tritt song called Here's a Quarter, Call Someone Who Cares, and it would just not make any sense today.
Right.
To anybody. Kids these days wouldn't even understand.
Here's some minutes on a prepaid card.
Here's a burner.
So Lauren comes to Shooters to threaten Sydney over walking out on Roger. You know, basically choose her a new asshole. But before she leaves, she also gives her a very nice ring. So it's a little cycle with her. You know, she's got to punish you, but also make sure you know that the rewards are there if you can stick it out, I guess. So over in Jane and Michael and Matt's world, Michael wakes Jane up calling from the hospital. She hasn't been returning his calls and she won't come and visit. Robert says that Jane would feel better if she just went ahead and went over there and saw him. And then he either goes down on her or he gets out of bed to leave. I couldn't tell. Jane made a really funny face though, so I would like to assume that she was getting eaten out. Jane visits Michael and gives her a big spiel about the accident being life-changing and it's making him want to start fresh. He needs forgiveness. Jane says she saw the engagement ring on Kimberly's finger, and now he owns up to having asked Kimberly to marry him. Jane says that she does forgive him, but she also leaves quickly. Matt comes to Michael's room to tell him that Kimberly died after being moved to Cleveland, supposedly. Matt's worried about the crime he committed changing Michael's test results, and he lets Michael know that he spent the day trying to find him a rehab hospital to go to so that he doesn't wind up on the street, and Michael tells him to leave before he has someone throw him out, because Michael's mad at everybody now except Jane. Over coffee the next morning, Matt tells Jane that he'll be taking Michael to Glenview, and he asks her to pick up his clothes at the beach house, which is somehow still sitting there, even though nobody is paying rent on it or living there. Michael is shocked at the conditions at Glenview when he and Matt arrive, but Matt tells him it's only temporary until a bed opens up at Rose Lake in a month or maybe 2 weeks, if he's lucky. But Michael's a doctor, damn it, and this is not good enough for him. And what it is, it's like this long room with bed after bed after bed and barely any room at the end of the beds to walk past. And when they walk in, the dudes who are there like stare at them, and it's supposed to be super creepy. The kind of stuff you see in movies. So Jane arrives there with Michael's stuff, and she's pretty shocked by what she sees. She says she's sorry about Kimberly, and Michael complains about how bad the conditions are there, and then he says that he's probably going to be there for months and months.
Oh my God, which he's totally lying on purpose.
Yeah.
He's like totally trying to manipulate her, and he's acting like such a brat through this whole situation.
Yeah.
Michael is the worst.
Yep. And he says it's so bad there that he was thinking about asking if he could move in with Jane.
And the whole time I was like, Jane, don't do it. Don't do it, girl. No. Say no to everything Michael asks for.
But we know how Jane's mind works. So she ends up having nightmares about poor Michael suffering in that place. And when she wakes up, her chin is all wet. I don't know if she was drooling in her sleep or if her tears have somehow rolled down that far.
Oh, I thought it was sweat. Oh. Like she woke up in a cold sweat.
Oh, okay. But
yeah, I don't know.
It's so weird, though. It's just on her chin. I wonder if the makeup people were like, you better not screw up her whole face. Just do her chin or something.
Yeah, we have to film a whole scene after this.
Yeah. But definitely, we're not going to film new opening titles, even though the opening titles have Jane and Michael all hugging and stuff. It's so stupid. I hate the opening titles. Anyway, she goes over to see him, and she invites him to live with her back at Melrose Place until a bed opens up at Westlake or Rose Lake or whatever it's called. I heard both in the episode. But it's only an arrangement. There's going to be a full set of ground rules, and it's because she is seeing someone as though he doesn't know who Robert is. They've already gotten into fisticuffs and stuff, so I don't know why she doesn't just say Robert. Katya's uncle has called from Russia because her mom collapsed. So she needs to go to Russia, but she doesn't want to bring Nikki because she needs to be able to move freely about the country. So Matt agrees to watch Nikki while Katya's gone. And while Katya is giving Matt a huge hug, you can see that Katya is wearing very ugly clip-on earrings.
So this whole, like, I can't take my kid because I need to be able to freely move about the country. I don't know what that is supposed to mean.
Me neither.
Is it supposed to imply, like the show likes to do, imply that, like, somehow every single possible aspect of life in Russia is just, like, incomprehensibly hard? Or is it just some silly reason that the writers came up with to create this drama where, you know, Nikki stays behind and Matt has to take care of her? I don't know. It's just, like, such an odd thing to say.
I mean,
there are times when, I mean, kids are always like a little extra work on top of all the other stuff you're doing, right? So you could arguably say like, oh, I need to be able to give my full attention to the situation, or I don't want her to be, you know, stressed out or whatever. I don't know. It's just like, it was such an odd reasoning
to give. It's like the airport is a day's drive away from where my mom lives, and I don't want to have to stop for the bathroom all the time. Nikki's really annoying in the car. Over a fancy dinner, Jane tells Robert that Michael's moving in with her. He can't believe what he's hearing, and he says that he will try to support her, but he cannot promise to be around while Michael is, which is definitely understandable. I think he should go there and fuck with Michael and beat him up and stuff. Like, Michael's very vulnerable right now. Take advantage, dude.
Yeah, for real.
So Sydney is shocked when Michael arrives in a wheelchair at Melrose Place to stay with Jane. They go inside, and Jane helps him into bed, and he makes a huge show out of his terrible back pain, which will probably get exponentially worse sleeping on a fold-out couch, because even the best back will wake up completely bent to shit off of one of those. So she walks off screen, and he has this big shit-eating grin, which lets us know that the entire thing is a huge act.
And I hate him. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, God, Jane, don't talk to that guy. Fuck that guy. I mean, okay, fine. That's her ex-husband. I guess I get it. They had a relationship, but I don't know, man.
Still, come on.
I mean, he's just such a turd. Mm-hmm. All right. So next we have episode 14 of season 2 called Strange Bedfellows. Ooh. Really inventive there, guys. So Michael, Jane, and Sydney. Jane helps Michael out of bed and into the wheelchair and confirms his breakfast order. She says she has a new life and routine and he's not to interfere with it while he's there. He whines that his toast isn't burnt enough. And I just would have been like, okay, well, your hands work and the toaster is right here.
Yeah, it's on the table, which is weird.
Feel free to fucking toast it up, bro. Toast it up. Later, when he's alone, Michael tries to get out of bed on his own so he can get to the fruit bowl and falls to the floor. He screams for help and Sydney comes, but instead of helping him up, she wants to talk. The only thing that'll make her feel better is if he lets her back into his life, which he agrees to. The next morning, Jane ensures Michael has everything within reach and he demands to know her whereabouts all day in case of emergency. Like, oh my God, the way that Sydney blatantly like manipulates people to be in relationship with her just makes me cringe so hard. And like, I kind of feel for her. Like, I feel like people act that way for a reason, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's still just hard to watch because it's like, girl, like, if you basically say I won't help you up off this floor and into your wheelchair unless you have a relationship with me, I mean, God, that is so just not good for anybody.
You know what I wished for? Like, she was kind of reminding me of Kathy Bates in Misery for a second. And I was kind of hoping that Jane was going to have to go out of town and Sydney was going to have to watch him.
And then she's going to sledgehammer his foot?
Yeah, yes, totally.
I'm into it. Somebody get the writers on the phone. So Jake brings a file to the FBI. And when he asks if they should really be bothering with Palmer, the agent says he's been running scams for years. They also want Jake to wear a wire and get Palmer to confess. Oh, and this whole storyline, like these interactions with the FBI agents, some of the best like facial expressions and camera cuts and music, like they'll cut to the FBI guy's face because Jake will say something like, what's the big deal? And they cut to the FBI guy's face and his face is all like, what did you say? This guy's, you know, like, yeah. Just the acting by this one FBI agent is so over the top that it is and wild. Truly fun to watch. But Jake's late getting to the garage and Amanda's on the phone. She needs to meet with him urgently and won't get into it on the phone. And I definitely thought that she was going to be like, I know you're working with the FBI and I have information and I'm going to sell my dad out, which, spoiler alert, is not what happens. But
too bad.
He meets Amanda and it turns out there's no emergency. She's taking him on a surprise ski trip. She's grateful for him being there for her and says it feels so good to be able to trust someone. Over cereal, Billy browses women on his dating tape. Oh, yeah. The boss of the magazine is making Billy and that other lady do this, like, video dating story.
Yeah, that's a little below in the thing, but I forgot that it gets mentioned in Jake's blurb. So, video dating, the wave of the future.
And not to, you know, like, if y'all, there's a podcast called Decoder Ring from Slate, and they decode cultural mysteries is what they say they do. And they have one on video dating, and it was pretty awesome. Mm. It's just so funny to think about video dating. And I always, whenever I think about video dating, I always think about singles.
Yes.
He's only, like, the next Martin Scorsese. Come to Debbie Country.
I want you to know that one time there was an apartment for rent in the singles building and I called trying to get a viewing, but they never called back.
Oh God, you could have lived in the singles building. Christopher, that would have been so amazing.
I
oh
know.
My God. I kind of want to watch that movie now. I was listening to, there's another podcast called How to Blank Check, and they do like all the, they talk about movies and they talk about like all the movies of a certain director. And they were talking, they did an episode on Singles. I think this is who did the episode on Singles that I listened to. Anyway, they were talking about how like it's really not like, it's really not that good of a movie and kind of nothing happens. And I was like, oh my God, it's true. Really kind of nothing does happen, but I love it so much because it's like a, it's such a time capsule slice of life from that era. Like watching it is so oddly nostalgic. And I was kind of too young. Honestly, I was too young. I was not experiencing life in that way at that time. I was like 13 or something. But it still is just so, it's like, do you ever watch, I have this experience sometimes watching Melrose Place when something is so nostalgic of a time period that you almost get like a whole body, like, I don't know, almost like dissociation. I don't know how to explain it. Just like so overwhelmed by nostalgia that you feel almost completely discombobulated.
Yeah. And I love Singles. And I actually, the fact that it is a movie where not a lot happens, I actually really like movies that are just kind of like characters that you like and you just see a certain period of their life.
Right.
And you know, you almost wish that there would be a couple of other movies about another time, you know, or I can really enjoy just like, here's a few days in these people's lives type of movie. And I don't think there's enough of them, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like it too. I am not always a huge fan of, sometimes actually I will, I have been known to stop watching things. Like I actually don't, spouse and I stopped watching Breaking Bad at the very end of season two, cause it was too many plot twists and too many dramatic uppings of the ante. Like all of a sudden this thing and oh my God, plot twist. And I just, that kind of stuff actually after a while, it's almost like it overwhelms my adrenal system. And I'm just like, I can't do this anymore. I don't even, it's not even that I feel stressed out. It's that I almost become numb to the plot twist. Like, I'm just like, oh, here we go. Another unearned dramatic thing is going to happen, which I find is the opposite problem, right? Of slice of life. So right. Yeah, I don't know. And like everyone's watching Queen's Gambit and I just have no desire because I hate anything about fucking prodigies. I'm like, it's not real life, you know, blah, blah. I don't know. I get why, I get it on some level why people don't want to just watch real life, but I don't know. To me, that is, like you said, in some ways that is extremely enjoyable and almost preferable to the alternative.
Well, you know, prodigies are boring and you know what else is boring? Chess.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Anyway. we could go down that road all day, so let's just get back on track.
Second one under Jake.
Okay,
yeah.
Serial. Billy loves browsing women on his dating tape. Jake needs advice though, and swears him to secrecy and tells him everything. Billy's advice: the FBI can't make you do spy stuff. Tell them to go to hell. Jake tries to quit the FBI, but the agent tells him that they have enough evidence to put him away if he doesn't help them. He confronts Palmer, who immediately assumes he's blackmailing him, but Jake manages to turn the conversation around and Palmer admits to everything. As the agents rush in to arrest him, Palmer tells Jake, "I'll crush you." Jake arrives at Melrose Place to find Amanda in a panic about Palmer, and Jake confesses he was part of the investigation. She storms off to bail him out. Palmer lies to Amanda, saying Jake was the mastermind and set him up to take the fall.
Like, how could she possibly believe that, by the way?
I mean, bro, I get, like, loving your dad or whatever. It's cool. And obviously, like, she's learned from him how to be, to some degree, in business. But, like, I don't know. I just, yeah. Nothing about Jake's character would imply that he has somehow just gotten into this business and very, very quickly become the criminal mastermind of a mega operation. By the way, like, I feel like this business already existed before they brought Jake in.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And you know what else that just occurred to me? None of this would have happened if she didn't knock over a torch with her stupid giant purse at Jake's bikes. Jake would have his own shop and it would be successful and he and Joe would be happy. I like to pretend.
So Amanda comes to Jake's apartment to let him know he's being evicted. He tries to explain. I don't think that you can evict people for being in on the FBI investigation of your father either. I don't know. All these people need lawyers. He tries to explain that the FBI has been on Palmer's trail long before he came along, but she doesn't budge, saying he needs to be out by the end of the week. And he goes to Shooters, where Joe's kicking some dude's ass at pool. They awkwardly chat, noting that none of the regulars are around. He asks if she wants to play a game, and she says, "I don't think so, Jake. We already have."
Oh, ouch.
So clever. You know, sometimes I watch things and I'm like, you know, it would be super fun to spend a whole day just talking like people do on TV shows, because it would actually be so weird. So anyway, Allison and Billy. So Amanda and Allison review sales figures with Steve at D&D. He's impressed, especially with Allison, of course. He's like staring at her the whole time. No matter who's talking, he's staring at Allison. But he's going to Paris for 6 months to set up his international division, so they'll be dealing with someone else. Allison asks him about it, and he says a big project in an exciting city is the perfect way to get over someone, and apologizes for complicating her life. Billy's boss tells him and Celia that the cult at the center of an expose is threatening to sue, so they have 4 days to come up with an equally titillating feature. This is their big chance, and it's video dating. Allison arrives home. Also, this is another thing that I kind of hate now that I'm an adult in shows. It's like the idea of the big break. Almost nothing happens as a big break. And honestly, like, if you conceptualize something as your big break, like, at some point you're going to come to realize that it was just another opportunity and a line of opportunities towards whatever it is you're working towards, right? Like, yeah. There's just not a magical big break moment. I mean, hell, sometimes you get your big break, you get into it, and you're like, fuck, this is sucks. Okay. You know, like, how do I parlay this into something else? Like, there's no magic moment opportunity. And if you screw it up, honestly, you might get another chance. Or you might not. Like, it's hard to tell. But this idea of, like, make or break moments, other than, like, if you're hanging off a cliff, and you may fall or you may get saved. Like, there's really no such thing, right?
Yeah.
Not in the ways that TV portrays it. And I think it's kind of actually dangerous thinking to think that way about stuff.
And also overrepresented on TV in workplace plots is the important presentation. Everything's a presentation on TV. Like, stop with the presentations. It's not like that.
Right. Exactly. Allison arrives home just as a new Jeep arrives from Steve, along with a note asking her to dinner. Billy's there and super pouty. I mean, I would be upset too if the new guy in my lady's life could buy her a Jeep, and I can't even stop fucking annoying her for 2 seconds. Billy tells Celia he can't get into the video dating assignment because he has a sad about losing Allison to Steve. She tells him that it's an important assignment and Nancy stuck her neck out for them, so he just needs to get over it. Also, Billy, you're doing this to yourself. Like, you broke up with her.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how else to say it. Over dinner, Steve asks what Billy thinks of the car, not realizing they've broken up. He sees the situation as a second chance for him. Wait. Steve asks Allison. Oh, asks what Billy thinks of the car. I don't know why I thought he said Steve asks Billy what he thinks
hey,
of the
Billy,
car.
What do you think?
Hey, Billy, what do you think? He sees the situation as a second chance for him and Allison and invites her to the ranch for the weekend. On his video date, on Billy's video date, she asks a lot of questions. He assumes she's a gold digger because that's how he views all women now. He leaves after 3 minutes and Celia's livid about it. So this whole, the way that Billy, like, And to Sundry Jake, too, like the way they talk about chicks, man, bro, you know, you can't live with them, you can't shoot them, is like just infinitely so not. I mean, it's not like there's not obviously gender shit these days, but I just feel like this particular over bro-ishness would not be written in this way now. Celia is livid about it. Okay. Meanwhile, Allison and Steve take the Jeep on a picnic. She fawns all over his amazing qualities, and he says he's feeling the feelings mutual, obviously. He confesses he's visualized a life with her and says he loves her. They make out, and the camera cuts away as Allison looks overwhelmed.
Of course.
Also, oh my God, can we talk about Allison's outfit?
I don't remember it, so tell me about it.
Holy poop. So, first of all, I forgot to mention that I texted Christopher at some point when I was watching the first of these three episodes, and I was like, oh my God, Allison's hair is so bad. It's so, they cut it to like a little tiny bit above shoulder length, and then they do like the 90s, like swoops, you know, like swoop over to this side and swoop over to that side, and a lot of hairspray. And it looks so bad. But her outfit on this date is like white mom jeans and this like blue and white print, 90s print button down, short sleeve tucked into the mom jeans, and then white like walking athletic shoes, like the clunky kind. From the 90s. It is extremely not hot in any way, shape, or form. And yeah, I was like, oh my gosh.
It's going to get all these grass stains if they really go at it on this picnic.
I know, right? It does remind me, though, like at this time, I did have a pair of white chick jeans. Oh my God.
Chick jeans. Wow.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I haven't heard that phrase in a long time.
Kids, look up chick jeans, and it's spelled like chic, you know, but everybody said chick. So anyway, back in the house over candlelight and jazz, Steve and Allison start getting hot and heavy, and it's going too quickly for Allison, though. She's attracted to Steve, but is confused about Billy and doesn't think she can jump into a new relationship immediately. He asks what Billy has that he doesn't, and she says she has a commitment to him, and I was like, okay, stop. What?
Can we also talk about the room they were in? Because I couldn't figure out what room that was supposed to be. It looked like a guest bedroom, but it had his stereo. His stereo did not look like a stereo that a rich person would have. I don't know.
Yeah, it was not great. But when she said... So, like, basically, the only thing that she's got is, like, this sense of a commitment to Billy, who, by the way, just moved all his stuff out of their apartment. Like, yeah. What commitment, girl?
He broke up with her.
Y'all are broken up. What? It's not like you're married. You know, if they were married, I get it when married people are like, I feel like I need to make this work. We're married. We got a commitment. Especially if they've got kids. But, like, I just feel like I have a commitment to this man who fucking dumped me and moved all his shit out of my apartment.
And probably left Allison. Her holding the bag for the rent.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like, this rich, nice guy who's never been anything but lovely to you is like, oh, I see us as partners and doing cool stuff together. And you're like, no, I would rather have a weird sense of commitment to this drip who treats me like poop and acts like a baby.
And I think if we're talking about in the face and in the hair, Steve is 1,000 times hotter than Billy anyway.
Oh my God, yes. Steve's haircut, I think, could use some work. It's getting better. It was initially really bad. And it's gotten a little bit better because it's grown out a little bit. But it still needs a little work. But I agree. Steve, definitely cute.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Yeah. Allison is making bad choices.
Allison is making very bad choices. So then Billy finds Amanda. Okay, this whole scene was like, what in the world? So Billy finds Amanda struggling with a garbage can lid and also can't open it. So it's like a metal trash can. Kids, I know you don't know what that is, but it's like a metal trash can with a metal lid.
Oscar the Grouch style.
Oscar the Grouch is living. And Amanda, but it's not just this trash can. Amanda's like in a pile of trash bags. But we never find out why. Why was she in the pile of trash bags? We don't know.
It's not like she was kicking Jake out of her place. They didn't live together yet.
So anyway, Amanda's in a pile of trash bags trying to open this trash can. Billy starts to help her. And obviously, this is all just a setup so that they can end up with their faces too close together laughing and having a good time. And then they bone. But anyway, I was just like, what is this trash situation? I just, it was so perplexing.
Yeah, it was like they said, okay, we just need for Billy and Amanda to bone, and we have 10 minutes before they need the revisions over on the set. What can we come up with for them to, for him to trip and fall into her vagina? Like, it's bad.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And that's the episode. That's the episode, folks.
Well, last time we got a Thanksgiving episode, and now we get a Christmas one.
And it's right in time for Christmas in real time.
Yes. What great timing.
Oh, what great timing.
Unless you're our friend Christina, who maybe you'll hear this in, in time for Valentine's Day. Who knows how fast she'll go.
If Christina listens all the way to this point, I mean, God bless. God bless you, Christina.
Well, and in case she didn't know, I warned her all about Melrose Place season one.
Okay, that's good. Because, like, my biggest fear is that people will start watching it and be like, this is awful, and stop. I mean, if you really have to, I recommend, honestly, you can get away with skipping season one, I think.
You could, yeah.
But, I mean, I'm glad we watched it, but I don't know if glad is the word. I think it's good. I don't know. Who knows? It is what it is. But
well, it's almost like with a soap opera, like you can't possibly catch up. So you're just going to dive in wherever, right?
Oh, yeah. And story arcs, as we're about to learn in this episode, only at most last about three episodes anyway. So
yeah.
It's like a whole new world every time you turn around in Melrose Place. So there's really no need to like worry about continuity.
Yeah, like who's fucking who and how did it start, and that's all you need to know. But anyway, Under the Mistletoe, episode 15, we open with Matt, who has been unable to get a hold of Katya in Russia, which you have to start to wonder, did Matt ever want kids? Because maybe he's going to have one.
I actually had a thought where I was like, is this just Katya's really wild way of abandoning Nikki to Matt forever? But no, that can't be right.
A while back, like maybe a month ago or something, I was trying to Google, you know, something about Nikki or Katya or whatever. And it was a spoiler for me because I saw Matt holding Nikki's hand from when Katya's cab drove away. And I was like, no. I don't want to be spoiled again by another GIF, but it happens all the time. So it's like, I keep getting spoilers from GIFs, but then when I want to try to find something, like a picture of the courtyard at Melrose Place, I can't find a good one, which is why my Zoom background is this watercolor.
The watercolor is amazing, though.
Yeah, it's true. So anyway, he hasn't been able to get a hold of Katya. Super nerve-wracking. Nikki wants a Christmas tree and a party and snow for Christmas. Thankfully, a package arrives from Russia with presents and a note from Katya. And it sounds like... even though there's all these gifts in the box, that Nikki thinks that more are coming from Santa. So it sounds like she believes in Santa, but we're not sure. Yeah. So Billy and Amanda, they make passionate love.
And it was not cute. Billy is kind of this weird thing where I get why he's supposed to be hot. Like he, like I said, got the bod, he's got a decent face, he's got the lips are particularly nice, and yet just he is just not sexy to me at all.
Something about the whole package comes together in all the wrong ways.
Right, yeah.
So what's that?
Oh, I was just gonna say he's got the raw materials, but not, yeah, but anyway, who cares? Continue.
So they're in the living room post boning, and there's a knock on the door, and it's Allison, and Billy hides behind the door, and for some reason Amanda invites Allison in for coffee, which is super risky.
I think she did it on purpose though, assuming Allison would walk straight and Billy could scoot out.
Or do you think maybe she kind of wanted to get caught?
Probably.
But Billy does run out the door, and he has a walk of shame set to Christmas music, which is pretty great. Nikki shows up with ornaments that she made. She's made them for at least everybody in the primary cast. We know that there are other people who live at Melrose Place, but we know nothing about them. I don't know if Nikki knows about them or if she made them ornaments, but the primary cast gets them at least. So Billy is like awkwardly trying to get dressed while all this happens. When he gets to the apartment, he pretends that he partied with hot twins all night when Jake asks about his night. Which, can I just say, I think the whole twins fantasy is really gross.
Yeah, those people are siblings, y'all.
Yeah. Would you ever, like, get nasty with any other set of siblings or even cousins or anything? Like,
God, no. No. It's gross. No. It's, no. Gross.
Even if they don't touch each other, it's still incest and gross. Sorry. You can't be any part of a sex act with your relative. It's gross. Ugh.
Because anyway. Like if they spit roast you, they're going to be looking at each other.
High-fiving. A little the wobbly H.
Eiffel Tower.
Yep. Speaking of Paris. God. That's actually why... Steve's going to Paris because he wants to do the Eiffel Tower with some with some French people. So Billy pretends that he was out all night partying with hot twins. Allison stops by to tell Billy that she wants to talk to him after work. I don't know, like, just stop by after work. But anyway, Allison shops for Christmas presents on her lunch break with Joe because she previously asked Amanda if she could have a day off for Christmas shopping, and Amanda said that would be bad form, and I agree. Although this is the days before online shopping, so maybe I'm not sympathetic enough to how hard it would be to shop for however many people, but
yeah, I mean, I feel like, yes, exactly. I did all my shopping on the internet, so.
Oh, I just flashed back so hard. I remembered one time I had to go to Sound Warehouse, which was
Sound Warehouse.
Oh, yeah, because we had probably a lot of the same stores in New Mexico and Texas. Did you have Hastings?
Yes.
Yes.
But only in smaller towns.
Hmm.
Like, not in any of the bigger cities. It was kind of known for being, like, a smaller town thing. Like, they had one in Sherman when I moved there.
Okay.
But we never had them in Dallas when I was growing up.
So if I had gone to Hastings, it wouldn't have been a big deal because Hastings was in a huge strip mall with a huge parking lot. But Sound Warehouse was convenient to the bowling alley where my mom worked. And I was over there in my huge, gigantic truck trying to park. And it was Christmas shopping. And there was one space and I was trying so hard to get into it and I couldn't. And then this guy was like blocking me when I was trying to just give up and leave. And I remember flipping him off and yelling and driving away.
Oh my God, Sound Warehouse. God, this is giving me that feeling. That
yeah, like we were talking about. Feeling like,
so like, hard.
My shoulders are like, it feels like I've been stretching even though I haven't. If
my brain has a tendency to remember just like weird things that no one would normally remember, you know, like not that I'm special in any sort of way. I just have like weird, like I have this very distinctive memory of pulling into the parking lot of the Sound Warehouse in Lewisville, Texas when I was in college. And I'm like, why do I remember that? Have no idea. Just like yeah. Totally burned in my brain forever. Nothing particularly happened. I just went to the freaking Sound Warehouse.
But I remember one time at that Sound Warehouse when there were a couple of shoplifters who got caught, and they were like mouthy to the employee who caught them. And I think that there had been a cop there, and maybe they filed a report or whatever. But the girls were like really rude to her, and they walked out. And then like she rang me up, and she's like, "If you catch up with them out there, could you just run them over with your car?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm into it. They're bitches." So anyway, Allison and Joe are shopping for Christmas presents, and she's frustrated because she can't get a hold of Billy, and she wants him to know that she told Steve that she loves him, as in Billy. She told Steve that she loves Billy. Which,
girl, get some self-respect.
Well, and also I'm not sure that Joe is the right person to have this conversation with, because Joe tried to date Steve and it didn't work out because of Allison.
Yeah.
So that's kind of rude.
Yeah, although I would hope at this point that Joe's over it. They only went out like, you know what I mean? They were just like, they just went on like a date or two.
Yeah, and I don't think they even boned, which is too bad. It's like, true. What a waste of a date. So Billy comes to the D&D Christmas party to talk to Allison per her request, and unfortunately runs into Amanda first. She's all excited because now she's like, Billy and I are dating again and we have a future and it's great. And we all know exactly what that's like. We think back to these cringy relationships that we dove headfirst into, and the other person wasn't quite into it. And that's another one you get the full body cringe flashback about. Allison tells Billy that nothing happened with her and Steve, and it's actually him who she wants to be with. But he says it's too late. The point being that Steve was even able to come between them in the first place.
And I was like, what the fuck? Like, the way he phrased it exactly really annoyed me. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was the fact that you were even attracted to him. Give me a break. People are attracted to other people, even mm-hmm. when they're madly in love. My spouse and I, like, constantly will be like, oh, they're hot, blah, 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 they're hot, da, 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 they're hot, like, and we don't even have an open situation. We, like, but, I mean, it would be completely insane-o.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is also a double standard oftentimes, you know, where it's like, guys, there's this cultural understanding that women are just not that into looks. And we just, like, once we fall in love, we just can't look at anybody else and think that they're cute. And it's like, that's so fucking dumb shit. That's dumb.
Yeah.
Men made that up because men are extremely insecure creatures. Like, I promise you, everyone, totally. I don't care what anybody says. Honestly, I know you should just, like, listen to people when they tell you what they think. But I just personally think that, like, I'm sorry. You cannot tell me that you only find one human on the whole face of this fucking planet attractive and that you're not, like, sometimes attracted by other people.
It's, yeah, not realistic.
That's stupid. And Billy is being a child.
Yes.
Again.
He's being Billy.
If a man talked to me this way, I would be like, I am done with you. This is stupid.
Especially when there's another man who's way better available.
Oh my god, that man literally bought you a car. Like, it's not all about money, but girl, come on. It's not like he's a troll with money. He's like a hot guy with money and a decent personality.
Yeah. So this whole time that Billy's being all pouty and an asshole, Amanda sees the whole thing and she's visibly thrilled, which is funny because, you know, she's thrilled because now Billy is available to her, which, you know, she wasn't even that into Billy when they were together before. She already said that he wasn't that good of a lay. And then now she sees all this and she's still hot for him. Like, come on.
I think Amanda is just one of those people who has to have somebody be all about her. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, and now that Jake is not there, like, now that her and Jake are having a falling out, she needs Billy to be on her hook. But that I don't think sense. She really likes Billy.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I guess Billy is probably slightly better than her vibrator. So. So anyway, later on, Jake waits on the steps that come down from Amanda's apartment so that she has no choice but to talk to him. He wants to talk about Palmer. And she still believes that Palmer's innocent and that his career will be ruined and that everything is Jake's fault. And she explicitly states that she is no longer interested in Jake. Billy and Jake shop for Matt and Nikki's tree for some reason. And Jake tells Billy that he's a fool. And wait a minute. Okay. Matt is the one who has a car. I don't think Billy has a car. Like, how does this work?
Yeah. Nothing makes. No, Billy probably has a car. I mean, how else is he getting all over town?
He's going
to work and stuff.
Yeah. They need to show everybody's cars. Like, we get enough of Allison's car coverage. Like, we know about Betsy.
We get it. You drive an old beat up Ford Escort or whatever.
And now you have a Jeep too. It's like it's the Allison car show. Well, anyway, they're shopping for the tree. Jake tells Billy that he's a fool for not taking Allison back, and it turns out that Joe and Allison are there and they want the same tree. They were right on the other side of it. Jake, ever the peacemaker, suggests one giant tree for the courtyard.
Actually, a good idea.
Yeah, we like you, Jake. Joe and Jake head to the laundry room to get ornaments from storage, and Billy tells Allison that he's heading out of town to hang out with his mom and his sister, even though he previously said back in the apartment to Jake that there just aren't any flights. And it turns out that Billy doesn't have a ticket and he's trying to get home on standby, which, for those of you who were not alive in pre-9/11, you used to just be able to walk around the airport and talk to the gate agents at the different airlines and ask what they could do for you.
The funny thing is like, I know they still do standby call outs at the airport, but I guess I don't know how it works now. Like, how do you even get in?
Because you need a boarding pass to get in.
I don't know.
Do they give you a boarding pass for a flight that is sold out? I don't know. Yeah, this could be a thing we look up, but we're not going to do that right now.
Yeah, I vaguely remember when you could just be in an airport.
Do you remember, like,
when
the expectation was that you would be, like, waiting at the gate when people came out of their plane and, you know... God, I don't miss that. One thing I really like about the new security post 9/11 at airports is that, you know, airports are crowded enough without extra people who have no business being there around. I think it's good that they are stuck waiting for you either in their car or at baggage claim. Like, the last thing I need when I'm all tired from a flight and I need to pee real bad is people who know me standing there waiting to talk to me. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah. I that does not sound ideal.
Yeah. So anyway, Billy's wandering around. You know, an agent tells him about a possibility way across the airport, and he's running through the airport in another little Christmas music montage. First it was his walk of shame, and now it's his run of desperation. What he's trying to do is he's just trying to get a flight to Denver, assuming that if he can make it to Denver, he can get a connection, but that's kind of risky. And it turns out he never gets one anyway. Complete waste of time. Over with Jane and Michael. Michael moans while drinking about Robert and that the Christmas tree is too big and it's in the way of the TV. And he doesn't think he'll ever walk again. So Jane, you know, and here's a question I had last episode. When Jane decided to move Michael into her place, what did she think was going to happen in terms of the care that he needed?
Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. Thankfully, she got smart and she hired a nurse named Colleen, because she's going to be away for Christmas with Robert. This nurse was played by Marianne Mueller-Lila.
Who I think always plays a nurse.
Probably, yeah. Like, I would say
I've definitely seen her before, and I feel like home health nurse is like a thing I've seen her do before.
Yeah, well, she has 230 credits on IMDb, which is impressive for sure. But the problem is when you look up stuff that she's been in, like, you're going to recognize it, but you don't remember her on it. And I think one of the big issues is that she looks a lot like other actors. She looks like the one who played Beast on Glee, and she looks like the one who played Large Marge in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and she looks a lot like the coach from Porky's, but she's not those people. She's just somebody who looks like them. So Jane puts on her very weird silk coat, and she leaves, and immediately Michael tries to fire the nurse, and he says that if she'll leave, he'll pay her double. Which, again, how is that possible? He can't possibly have any money. But she takes her job seriously, and she only takes orders from Jane, so she's not going anywhere. And she's not there to feel sorry for Michael or let him feel sorry for himself. And that's when he has a little breakthrough, and he realizes that he really only has been thinking about himself. So he convinces Colleen to take her to Robert's party. And Jane happens to be...
gets a cab.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. She's not there, which it would have worked better if she was for him. So Jane arrives at the cab, at the party in a cab. No, sorry. Michael arrives at the party in a cab. And Jane happened to be like pouting on the deck when the cab pulled up. So she saw it happening. So she runs down there. Michael is there to apologize, because, you know, he supposedly had his breakthrough. I doubt it. But, you know, Jane decides that what's for the best is if she just drives Michael home, because the cab took off. And Robert says, if you're going to do that, just don't bother calling me later. Which, whatever. So as far as what's going on with Sydney... Joe drops by Shooters during the lunch rush because she wants to invite Sydney to Nikki's Christmas party. And she watches over her shoulder, and it's great because you can see in the background, Joe is like, she's blurry, but you can see her watching the whole thing. Lauren shows up and she passes Sydney a little vial of cocaine, plus the details for her next client. She says that Sydney is now her number one girl and that she should just quit Shooters, but Sydney's using that job at Shooters as her cover story, which is a terrible cover because the hours are different from the times that she's trying to cover for, because, you know, she's hooking at night. And if she should just say she has a job in an office and not even offer details, you know, like,
right.
Why pretend that your job is a place where people can actually come see you and order a burger? Like, just say you're a fashion assistant or whatever, or a model. She already lied and said she was a model. She could just say she's modeling. She's bad at this. her clients cannot get into it to start with. He's just very lonely at Christmas, and he says that he just wants to talk. And she says, like, it costs the same either way, if that's all right. And he's like, yeah. So she lies about her life and says that she's in school to be a fashion designer. What's really happening is that she's just very jealous of Jane, but she also wants to be famous and important. And all of the talk that she's doing about this actually gets the guy horny enough, and they can proceed with the bone down. The guy is played by Rick Hurst, who was Cletus on the Dukes of Hazzard, and he was one of the cops in Earth Girls Are Easy, the legendary Earth Girls Are Easy.
I still have never seen that. I can't believe it.
Oh my God.
I need to just watch it.
I think that's what you should do today. It's incredible. You will love it. And if you don't love it, I am so sorry about your terrible taste. I'm just kidding. So Sydney is on her way home from the bone down, and her car breaks down in front of a church.
This whole scene, and this is what I mean when I say, like, very dramatic arcs are going to be cleared up in like 3 episodes, because mm-hmm. she basically, like, Sydney goes into the church, and like goes into confession, and is like, and has an epiphany, you know, and is like, I'm done with this thing that I just got into doing like 2 episodes ago.
Yeah. And we don't even see what the priest tells her to do about it. Excuse me. Cause aren't there supposed to be like some Hail Marys or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I am not Catholic. Everything I know about this process, I know from television. So do not quote me on any of it. But I think they just tell you, like, how many Hail Marys to do based on the severity of what you tell them.
Yeah. So I guess what the system is, basically, you can do anything you want as long as you feel bad about it for a little while.
I mean, you know, it's funny because, like, people always diss on that, but to some degree, all humans are screw up machines. And so grace is important in life, I think. But yes,
that's a good point.
I think that this particular system is weird, because I don't know that, like, okay, you shoplifted a candy bar, so 2 Hail Marys, that should do it. Like, that's an odd system. But
I wonder if there's like a guideline that they read from, or if they just kind of make it up on the fly. Like,
they're like,
let me flip over to that tab. Was it a name brand candy bar, or did it have peanuts in it? Anyway, now it's time for the Christmas party. Amanda tries to make small talk at the party with Jake, but he starts a fight about the heat in the building. We've already heard that Amanda is trying to save money by turning down the heat in the pool. And now apparently all of their apartments are cold, except he's like, I bet yours is toasty warm, blah, blah, blah.
Also, it's LA. How cold could it be?
Right.
I mean, come on.
Well, and I don't think the only heat that I have ever encountered in apartments where it could possibly be controlled in any way is central steam heat. And I highly doubt they have radiators in those apartments.
Right.
So it's probably the little, at the bottom of the wall, the little hole in the wall with the heated units and the fan, and they would be controlling those themselves.
Yeah, like this style of apartment building, and also basically like thinking about when it would probably have been built, you absolutely would have window units for your air conditioning and some kind of like individual module for your heat.
Yeah.
There's no way this building has central anything.
Yeah. There is not the opportunity for Amanda to be the ruthless landlord that he's painting her to be. You know, at most, like, she might disable the ultra hot setting on the washing machines and the pool, of course, but we know about that. Anyway, right. Billy could not get a flight, of course. So he's there playing Santa. And what he did do at the airport is buy up a bunch of gifts from the bargain table at the airport gift shop. So I guess everybody's getting like I Heart LA mugs and snow globes with palm trees in them or whatever. Nikki does call out the fact that it's Billy in the costume. So if she does believe in Santa, she knows that that ain't it.
Right. She's like, good job, Billy.
Yeah. And it is funny to think about because there haven't really been any fat people on Melrose Place at all. Like the chunkiest guy would have been this last client that Sydney had.
Right.
So Jane catches Sydney on her way out and asks her to join the party. But Sydney is like, oh, I'm always a disaster at parties and I'm all partied out anyway. But she sincerely wishes Jane a Merry Christmas and she leaves in tears. And then Katya calls from Russia with a Christmas surprise. She's staying and she has booked a flight for Nikki to join her in Russia.
So after all of that, this is how they get rid of Katya.
Right. And now Matt is going to have to do like a transcontinental divorce.
Oh my God. I would have been like, and it's so like, he's like, I'm so sad because Nikki's leaving and I love her. But I'm like, I would have been fucking pissed. Like,
yeah.
You made me marry, I mean, not made you. He did it on his own free will. So whatever. He should be mad at himself. But it's like, we got married. So you can stay here and did all that. And the whole INS dude thing. And now you're just going to stay in Russia? No.
Yeah, to hang out with your old ass mom, whatever.
No.
No. Yeah, it's dumb, for sure. So in the aftermath of the Christmas party the next day, Allison wakes up and finds Billy leaving presents under yet another tree that's in their apartment. I don't know.
Wait a minute, but her and Joe were shopping. Okay, that is so confusing.
Yeah, so like I guess they brought home a tree for themselves even though they were bringing home one for the courtyard.
That does not make sense.
I guess it's a good thing that Allison got this sweet Jeep because it was clearly capable of carrying tons of trees. And don't forget that Jane has one too. But Robert probably brought her that one. So anyway, they apologize to each other about the Steve situation. And then they kiss. And then they probably bone off screen. Which is fine with me. Because every time they show Billy boning, it's like this slow motion and soft jazz, and I can't stand it. It's the least sexy thing I've ever seen.
The minute that, for everybody at home, so you can't see me, like the minute Christopher said, every time we see Billy Bone, I just like started shaking my head and making this like ooh face, because like, ew, I don't want to see it. No.
Yeah, it's like the worst of the worst. Okay. Michael gives Jane a pair of earrings, and she gives him a very ugly sweater. Robert shows up to apologize and gives her a necklace. And they kiss outside while Michael watches, of course, through the blinds. And it's really funny because they try to do the thing where the shadow of the blinds are on his face to emphasize the fact that he's looking longingly through blinds like you always did in the 80s and 90s. But the
it always reminds me of that Rod Stewart video, Infatuation.
Oh, totally. I know what I'm watching next.
Yeah, that's a jam.
you're watching Earth Girls Are Easy and I'm watching Infatuation.
It will take you like 5 minutes to watch that.
I didn't say how many times I would watch it. But here's the best thing. The shadows of the blinds on his face, the slats are like really far apart. Like they wouldn't close. If you close the blinds, there would be like two empty slats between the two lines. Like I think that they just might have held up a couple of rulers or something to make the shadow. It's bad. Lauren comes to Sydney's with a charity gift basket benefiting Planned Parenthood. Sydney hands over the whole wad of money that she has, and she says that she's quitting and just to keep it all because she's sure that she owes Lauren some money. And Lauren smartly says, why don't you keep this money? Good luck. You're going to need it. And if you want to, you can always come back. And that's clearly going to happen because Sydney got a taste of the good life with that credit card. Matt takes Nikki to LAX, and Nikki's hair is so bad that it should count as neglect. She runs back for one last hug, and she says that she loves Matt, and they cry, and Matt probably is now thinking that he can get laid again for the first time in months. Hopefully that guy at the gallery is still interested.
Oh, yeah,
Joel, whatever his name was. Maybe by now his stubble goatee has grown out into a slightly better regular goatee.
I mean, it was the 90s, though. I have very little hope for him getting a good goatee.
Yeah, sad. In their post-bone glow, Allison and Billy head out and kiss under the mistletoe in the courtyard. And Amanda sees them, and it's obvious that thoughts of revenge are dancing in her head.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that is the end of episode 15, season 2, Under the Mistletoe.
Woo! Well, that brings us to the end of our episode. A lot happened this week. sadly, no jorts though. So
sorry, jorts. We couldn't have Jorts Corner again.
Jorts Corner.
That was gonna be my favorite new feature, but we did get pool time for the first time in a while. So
pool time, Christmas pool time.
Right.
Oh, and send me the image file for that watercolor, and I'll slap it on our.
Oh, totally.
Website.
Yeah. I'm just going to do that right now because that's how I am.
Sweet.
So thanks everybody for joining us for another amazing episode of Melrose Sheltering in Place.
Yeah, yes. And I was going to say next Saturday is the day after Christmas, and then the next Saturday is like, do you want to just like, this is, I'm just basically discussing logistical business while we're recording, but you know, so everybody can hear. I was going to see how you feel about like just not recording again until like Saturday the 9th or something.
I can do that. I can shift the recurring thing 1 week over. I think that's a good idea because, you know, holiday weekends are for not doing anything.
Yeah. That's for laying around and doing nothing. And, you know, so anyway, all that to say, folks, consider this your warning that we are now going on break until after the new year. Enjoy your whatever the hell you're doing for your holiday. But if it's getting together with a bunch of people, then fuck you. And, you know.
Yeah, totally. Like right now, speaking of the pandemic, we have the worst numbers we've ever had, and it's because of Thanksgiving and people not understanding that they can have one last Thanksgiving or a lifetime of them. Quit hanging out with other people. You need to hang out by yourself at your house or start a podcast or listen to a podcast.
Exactly. Start a podcast. I promise. It's easy and, you know, who cares if only five people are listening?
Yeah, you've changed five people's lives forever.
So anyway, if you want to catch us on the internet, I'm at Nanarchist on Instagram. It's the only social media I have.
And I'm at xtofer575. And that is where we also post exciting Melrose Sheltering in Place content, like Jort's Corner for last week's episode. So be sure to follow us and check constantly, because you know, a lot of social media these days is an ephemeral story format, and sometimes that's where the best of it is. So you gotta be there all the time, or you're gonna miss the best stuff.
Okay, well, I have a completely different view of social media, but nonetheless, point stands. Check us out on the internet as long as we're there. I don't know. I'm constantly considering disappearing forever. Yeah. But, you know, until that happens, I am on Instagram. So, yeah, and I guess, yeah, that is all that I have. Christopher, yeah. Do you have anything else?
Just Happy New Year, everybody, and Merry Christmas if you do that, and whatever else.
Yeah, yeah. Happy the holiday of your choice.
Yeah.
And we will see you in 2021.
Woo! Bye.
Bye.